Okay, today I'm with Nick Child that's come all the way from Singapore just for this interview. Well, maybe not, but thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us, Nick, in your time over here. Can you tell us what your current position is at the moment?
Yeah, current position, Simon, at the Singapore Turf Club. Obviously, Kranji is our race course. Presenter, producer, race caller is my role over at in Singapore, and I've been there nearly 3 years, so yeah, enjoying it. Back here at Goodwood for a little bit of a holiday, a little bit of a break, and obviously lovely to be back at a wonderful race course, and even better to be talking to you.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, doing my research, you're from a non-racing background, in fact brought up on a council estate in Islington, so how on earth did you get, you know, interest in horse racing to begin with?
Yeah, absolutely. So Dalmeny Avenue was where I grew up, and as you say, in Islington, just up between sort of Holloway and Camden Town. Family full of Arsenal fans, as you'd imagine, being from there. So look, racing was never so much, you know, cemented in the sort of the family DNA in regards to a job or a vocation. It was very much, you know, a punt and having a bet, and that came from my grandfather. He was, you know, in my world anyway, he was a great man, and he got me interested in racing. And it was one Christmas. I went. It was Christmas. You want to buy presents for people. You want to sort of, you know, have a good time and make it enjoyable for everyone. And my mother suggested that I go and sit up with my grandfather and have a bet. So I remember he put my first bet on for me. I was probably about 12 or 13, and it all just went from there. I was hooked from an early age, and it was, you know, it's sort of 99%, you know, through him that I took an interest in racing, and from there, you know, it's just snowballed, and I've been able to go on and do some wonderful things. But yeah, a council estate in Islington certainly probably isn't breeding ground for big racing names, that's for sure.
So did that first bet, that hooked you on horse racing and not betting?
I've never been a big punter, I think, to start. I've never, the punt has never really been, say, the be-all and end-all for me. I can really give or take it, but I think the whole aspect of the sport and the way in which, you know, racing is conducted, and just, I mean, you know, like anyone would testify, and yourself, I'm sure, that they're the most gracious of animals, and I just think what they're able to do, you know, and what a racehorse can achieve, both on the flat and over jumps, is just phenomenal. And that's what I love about it. I love the sport, you know, the camaraderie, and having worked then with a lot of people in different yards and so on and so forth. It's just a lovely community to be involved in, and to be honest, I mean, I left school probably, I wasn't an A-grade student by any stretch, you know, I'd like to have plenty of common knowledge and you know, general know-how and whatnot, but once I sort of discovered the racing, 12, 13, going on 14, you know, it wasn't so much taking the course books to, you know, the homework books to school, it was more of a racing post, so from a young age.
It was taking the tube to Andrew Reid's Mill Hill Yard, wasn't it?
Correct, yeah, so it came to a point, I was about 15, and at school, you know, you choose to do your work experience. And by this point, I was that hooked on racing that I said, right, and you know, given my stature, I was never going to be a jockey, but I thought the idea of this seems pretty fun and a good idea. And I went into my work experience teacher, and I basically said, I want to go to a racing yard. And with the powers of the internet and so on and so forth, I discovered Andrew Reid, trained in Mill Hill, which is only a stone's throw from us, really. On the tube up to sort of, you know, North, you know, Finchley and Mill Hill East and whatnot, and I couldn't go there until I'd had some experience with horses. So I got sent to a riding school in Barnet for a week, where I knew absolutely nothing, learnt the bare basics, learnt just being around a horse or a pony, and then I ended up going to Andrew's for a week, and then from there I then was able to stay on during the summer holidays and go in there, and I learned a lot there. I learned how to ride. I led horses up. We led up winners, and I just learned everything at Andrew Reid. And I owe him and everyone there, a huge debt of gratitude, because, you know, without them, I probably wouldn't be here now, and racing probably wouldn't be my thing as such. But yeah, getting the tube to Andrew's was a bit different. You know, most people get on the tube in suits and with newspapers and whatnot, and I was on there with riding boots and a whip and a hat and wanting to go into Andrew Reid's.
So. So from there you went to Seamus Mullins?
I did, yeah, I went to Seamus. So I was at Andrews, and I was very much a kid, and I was just coming to the end of school, secondary school. And basically I thought, you know, where can I go? And I never went on to further education, which, looking back on it, probably was perhaps not so much a silly thing to do, but I like to think I've ended up doing okay. But it was either going to be Seamus Mullins or David Pipe at the time. And I had my sights set on being a point-to-point jockey, and David Pipe at that moment in time was the champion point-to-point trainer. So I thought, well, he'd be ideal. And how I stumbled across Seamus Mullins, I really do not know. I was sort of searching the web, and you know, I sent him an email. He asked me down for an interview as such, and I rode out. Remember riding out a couple of horses down there. I certainly wasn't very good at it then. And yeah, he offered me a job, and I think I basically left school on the Friday, and I started there on the Monday, and that was it. I mean, I was a 16-year-old lad, dropped off by my parents. Mother confesses to crying all the way back to London, having dropped me off down in Wiltshire. And I just, you know, it was into the real world then. You know, I was then living with you know, people of an older age and stable staff accommodation, and with that, obviously, all the, you know, everything else comes with it. You know, the sort of the drinking culture as such in racing. Obviously, then having a bet, you know, and obviously the going out, the larking around, and you know, all that sort of jazz. So, no, look, it was a great education, and Seamus was wonderful, and actually, it's come full circle now, because it's probably what 16, pushing 17 years on, that I've now got a filly in training with him, who actually ran recently at Sandown, ran a good race to finish fourth, and hopefully we can we'll get a win or two out of her, and that would just be really nice, you know, because it's sort of just perhaps it's almost my way of giving a bit back to him, you know, to say thank you for everything he taught me. And I never forget it, the first day we rode out together with Seamus, his exact comments were, you know, I'll either make or break you. And I was there for a solid 2 years and rode in my first point-to-point while I was down there, trained a point-to-pointer just as a, you know, 17-year-old. So, you know, I learnt a lot. I sort of crammed a lot in, as I usually do. And yeah, that was great.
And then you went further west, or southwest, to Philip Hobbs.
That's right, yeah. So, and then from Seamus, I mean, I don't know what it was at the time. I was sort of doing these two-year stints, and maybe it was getting to the end of the second year and thinking, this is getting a bit stale now. I want to move somewhere else. But yeah, that sort of all came to a head, and there was a job advertised with Mr. Hobbs, and you know, obviously he's a trainer that needs no introduction really. You know, you know how good a trainer he is, and you know, he gets results, and he's had a lot of good horses and good winners. And I went down to Sand Hill, and I really loved it down there actually. I think of all my jobs, that was probably one of the nicest, because Minehead and that sort of area, the Quantocks, I thought was lovely. And you know, I went down there and spent a couple of years with Mr. Hobbs, and again just continued to progress. You know, I was doing a bit more down there in regards to, you know, helping running of the yard and stuff like that. And yeah, just had a great time. And I think most importantly, Simon, as well, is that, yeah, as you know yourself, in racing you meet a lot of good people and a lot of interesting people, and you make good friends. And that's exactly what I've done the whole way through. You know, whether it be Andrew's, Seamus's, Philip Hobbs's, or wherever. You know, I've always met some very good people and learnt a lot. And those friendships are still solid to today. So, you know, racing has been so good to me, and even up until that point, into my early 20s, you know, I was just thoroughly enjoying what I was doing. And Philip, just a gentleman, him and Sarah, two lovely people to work for and work with, and that's how it always felt. You know, you felt like you were working with them and not for them. So, but no, I led up my first Cheltenham Festival runner when I was working down there. It was called Bosham Mill and the Fox Hunters, and yeah, it was just a wonderful time, really. Yeah.
And then you hit the jackpot.
I then moved sort of a bit more around the West Country, a bit more around Somerset, and then Paul Nicholls's. I think, you know, not that I'm in any way famous at all, but I guess a lot of people might associate me with the great Quarto Star. And I was just very lucky. I was in the right place at the right time, and it came about that, you know, I was allowed to look after him and be his groom. I was there for a year, and then in the summer of 2008. You know, his groom at the time, Sonia Warburton, had left, and I was probably a massive price to get Quarto Star. You know, I was never considered, and yeah, they let me look after him, and it was just that was amazing. That was just an amazing journey.
Now, was it any different looking after a good one to a modest one?
Well, most definitely. I think anyone that says any different is probably telling lies. But you know, you treat them all the same. At the end of the day, they're horses, and we're there to look after them. And I think, you know, obviously, there's all this, you know, and certainly won't go into it, because I don't think I'm qualified enough, but, you know, debates with whips and things like that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, racehorses are, you know, get five-star treatment. They're so well looked after. And, yeah, whether it be a Gold Cup winner or a selling plater, you know, you do obviously give them the same level of treatment. But, yes, you would tend to a much better one, that's that little bit differently. And I certainly would with him. You know, he was a bit special, and we sort of kept him in his routine. We made sure he was okay, and everything was perfect with him. And yeah, I mean, look, you know, being a horse lover, you look after them all the same and you treat them fairly and equally. Yeah?
And what would have been your highlights? I suppose the Gold Cup, obviously.
Yeah, no, the Gold Cup was massive. You know, I was very fortunate. We had 11 races together for 6 Grade 1 wins, and obviously many sort of low points as well. You know, he unseated at Haydock 1 year in the Betfair, which I thought we were almost a knocking certainty to win. You can never take anything for granted, can you? You know, it's jump racing. I think the highlight was the Gold Cup. I'll never forget it to the day I die. You know, I can tell you exactly where I was, you know, how I felt, who I spoke to, and yeah, just phenomenal. And, you know, you get to a point where, you know, you then recognise and you realise that there are certain races you want to win, whether it be a jockey, trainer, owner, groom, whatever. And even now, as a race caller, there's certain races you want to call, you know, because they are the sort of the holy grail. But Cheltenham Gold Cup was phenomenal. I met my first member of the royal family after winning the Gold Cup, so that was quite nice. Princess Anne presented me with my prize and all the prizes, and yeah, no, that was fantastic. The Gold Cup was something I'll never ever forget.
I suppose something that comes with a yard being successful are the financial rewards, and you got yourself enough money to buy a point-to-pointer.
Yeah, foolishly probably. What a waste of money that was, it turned out. But I remember one summer, I think it was after 2008, summer of 2008, with racing, all the stable staff get their pool money every third, and ours 1 year was very, very good. I think at the time it was about probably $2,500, which was a lot of money for a stable left. And I thought it'd be a great idea to go and buy a point-to-pointer. His name was Jack Moon. It was by Moon Act, who obviously had a rather savage reputation, and I think he sort of bred a bit of that into Jack as well. But he didn't turn out to be much good for us. But it was nice to have a runner in the colours, and that sort of, again, got me sort of hooked on racehorse ownership. And I mean, when I was at Seamus Mullins's, I had a pointer as well. So, but that was a bit different slightly. That was sort of, he was leased to me. And had him on a lease, and that was a little bit different. But yeah, when I went and bought Jack Moon at Ascot Sales, I sort of had parted with my hard-earned, and I soon realised I wasn't getting it back.
Now, one thing before we finish this first part, I'm convinced that when Quarto Star first raced, it was Kato Star. Mm. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. I think it was one or two other pronunciations as well, but it was always, we were always set straight by his owner, Clive Smith, who always said, you know, it's take away the K, it's auto, so it's got to be Quarto. But yeah, in the yard, we were always Kato. He was always Kato. Paul called him Kato. Clifford Baker called him Kato. Donna, who used to drive the box, me, we all called him Kato. So Kato is what we sort of remember him as, but I guess his official title was Quarto. Yeah.
Okay, so I read that you're in a 2008 interview, you said your life goal was to become a commentator. Now, going from working in racing to becoming a commentator is still quite a leap. So how did you manage that?
Yeah, it was. Do you know, it was the way it all started with the race calling and the commentating was down at Philip Hobbs's, and obviously a lot of point-to-point, big point-to-point country down there. And when I was riding out, I'd sort of fool around a little bit, and you'd call the horses in the string, and you might even try and auction one as well, just for a laugh. And I like the aspect of it. I thought the sort of being descriptive about a race and describing a race was something that appealed. And you know, I was down there. I was probably 20, 21, and I went along to Holnicott, our local point-to-point, and the late great Alfie Sherrin was the commentator at the time. And I sort of asked him if I could call a race, and I'd spun in this yarn that I'd done it before, which is probably a little bit foolish, but he sort of bought it anyway, which was handy. And I called this 5-runner intermediate race, and I'd hate to watch it back now because I imagine it would be dreadful. But I'd done that, and I thought this is quite fun, you know. I enjoy this, and it just took off from there, really. And the point-to-pointing for me was a great schooling ground, you know, a bit like it is with the horses and the jockeys and the trainers. Still, for me, I was able to go, you know, end up calling point. And once Alfie retired, I ended up sort of getting the majority of his fixtures, and you know, I sort of created my own little niche point-to-pointing and race calling. And you know, you'd earn a little bit of pocket money, a little bit of cash by doing it. And you know, that was my focus every weekend, was to go to the point-to-point, learn the colours, learn the runners, and you know, go calling the races. And I just love it. There's nothing else I'd want to do. You know, I think it's just a great way to earn a living. And that's sort of how it really started in regards to sort of, you know, just the local point-to-point.
Right. So you're at places like Bratton Down calling point-to-points,
yeah,
pouring rain.
That's right.
In winter, and then all of a sudden, Or is it, was it all of a sudden you were in Malaysia and Singapore calling races?
Yeah, so as you say, like, you know, sort of trudging around all the point to point. And I've called in some very, very peculiar commentary positions. I mean, one of the best ones actually was out in Wales. It was basically the bucket of a tractor, which had a bit of a sort of a metal frame around it, and that got sent up in the air, and that was my calling position, which was a bit hair-raising, but, you know, I just loved it. I thought it was great. And then, yeah, I was at Richard Barber's, the late Richard Barber's at the time, working for Harry Fry, and I'd seen via Twitter that there was a job in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, and I never ever considered I'd be good enough. I mean, not so much not good enough that I couldn't call a race, but the fact that my CV had just read, you know, point-to-point races, and that was sort of, you know, the extent of my experience at the time. But I mean, somehow, miraculously, I got this job, and I actually got flown out to Malaysia for the interview. And initially, I didn't want to go. I turned it down. And then they asked me to reconsider. And I think, having learned a bit more, the reason they'd done that is because I believe I was the only one that actually applied. So the job was always mine. And I went out there. I called a few races this week, the weekend I went. And I just thought, well, you know, my aim, as you say, and my life's ambition was to be a race caller. And I thought, okay, it isn't Ascot or Goodwood or Cheltenham or Aintree, but I'm going to get paid to be a commentator. I thought, this is great. And, you know, I was lucky. They have a lot of races in Asia, 9, 10, 11 race cards. So you're always calling plenty of races, plenty of trial races. And yeah, I came back and they'd offered me the job, and I accepted it. And then shortly after, January 2014, I was on a plane to a one-way ticket to Kuala Lumpur, which was a bit scary, but, you know, sort of, I suppose I've always been a little bit nomadic. I just sort of, you know, I'm happy to sort of get up and go and sort of, you know, settle wherever I drop my hat, sort of thing. So yeah, that's how it went.
So I'm guessing you're on the plane with Rosetta Stone Learn Malaysian on for 13 hours or whatever it was.
Yeah, so I mean, it was it's interesting because people always say, you know, how do you get on with the language barrier and that sort of thing, but Kuala Lumpur and Malaysia probably more so, you know, in regards to the language and obviously the Malay and the sort of the different languages and dialects they have there, but you get by, you know, you get by and you pick up little things and little, you know, sayings and phrases. Whereas where I am now in Singapore, you know, it's probably 85% of people speak very good English. So, you know, the language has never been an issue. And, you know, again, it was very much a step into the unknown because, I mean, I didn't really know where I was going. Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, I'd never been to Asia. You know, you were having to have sort of jabs and different things and just to make sure you were sort of, you know, inoculated against all these different diseases and stuff. And you just think, wow, this is a bit mad. But, we got, you know, we got by, and it's all in English, and a lot of expatriates there, a lot of trainers and jockeys, and yeah, just again, just a really good, fun community and group of people to be around. You know, and again, I learned so much. Obviously, being in Malaysia then allowed me to take the next step to Singapore.
So tell us about Singapore.
So Singapore, we one race course at Kranji. I'm one of three English-speaking broadcasters, commentators at the Turf Club. We've got both an English and a Chinese broadcast channel. And yeah, look, it's great. I mean, you know, a lot of people that would be watching this would remember the international races we used to have in May. Obviously, they're no longer, but the plan is to get them back. And that certainly had Singapore on the world stage. And that's how I first sort of got attracted to Singapore. You know, and sort of Luca Kamani was sending horses and Andrew Balding would send horses, you know, Phoenix Reach and all these sort of horses all would go on their travels. And look, it's a great facility. I love working there. And again, it's got some really good friends. Some big names have been and gone. I mean, Derby winner Alan Munro was there for a long time. He's in South Korea at the moment. But, you know, when you turn up at the track and in the morning, and guys like Alan Munro, Glenn Boss, you know, Maccabi Diva fame, he's just gone back to Australia. Lee Friedman's a champion trainer. I mean, he trained the great mare. You know, it's a really, really interesting place to be. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I don't work a day. I don't do a day's work. You know, it's not work at all. It's very much pleasure.
So what are the major differences and challenges compared to England?
I think probably the most notable one, Simon, would be the weather, the heat. You know, obviously we've got a lovely day here today, and you know, obviously it's British summertime, so it's always going to be quite nice. But over there, it's constant. You know, it's very hot, very humid, very sticky. And when you're working in it and broadcasting and that sort of thing, it can be tough. But in regards to differences as far as the actual racing model goes, it is different. It's very much a sort of an Australian sort of style. Obviously, Hong Kong and, you know, our pari mutuel betting and our handicap system and that sort of thing. I find it quite rigid. You know, like the handicap system, for instance, which we've got class of race, and you know, unlike England, where sort of, you know, the handicapper has a lot of discretion and horses can probably stay in a grade and win a few more races or whatnot. Over there, it's very clear cut. So I think when you're doing a form, it can be quite obvious at times. But look, it's very good in the respect that everything's in one place. So we've got probably 1,000 or more horses, 30 trainers, 30 jockeys, and to get a handle on the form is very straightforward. I mean, you're never going to tip the card, don't get me wrong, it's not that easy, but the actual model's slightly different. But I suppose the biggest differences and the challenges, I think, the heat and the conditions, but I mean, ultimately, it's racing. We've got a top quality race course, and it's great sport there. You know, it's well received, and it always gets a good following. But as far as the differences go, I would say just the locality, really. The sort of just the conditions we've got to work in are obviously very different, and that can be a little bit taxing at times.
And how popular is it? Is it like Hong Kong? I mean, do you get that many people to? How many people will come on an average meeting?
Yeah, so you don't. I mean, we wouldn't be as big as Hong Kong. And in regards to attendances, I mean, we get a healthy crowd, but we wouldn't get the sort of the same numbers as Hong Kong. I mean, when you look at a Happy Valley on a Wednesday night, I mean, that's phenomenal. I've been very lucky to have a few nice trips to Hong Kong and go to the international races and stuff like that. And the way Hong Kong do things is wonderful. They're the envy of the world, you know. I mean, obviously, here in the UK, we've got some great race courses. I feel racing now here in England has really gone to another level. You know, I think there's a lot of nice changes being implemented. And you know, racing is becoming obviously very popular, and you know, they get a lot of people here at Goodwood and so on. But in regards to Singapore, I mean, you know, it could do with a little sort of, you know, breath of fresh air. It could do with a sort of a new lease of life. I think it can get a little bit stale. And I think our biggest undoing is that under 18s can't go racing. You know, and we can't really advertise our racing with certain restrictions on government and law, which is tough because, you know, you're trying to promote the product, and it's sort of you're restricted that little bit. But I think hopefully in time, if they open it up, and maybe, you know, they can sort of encourage the younger sort of group and the younger generation, maybe get them involved in ownership and membership, and you know, get them up there. But you know, Kranji's stuck out up in the north, which is not ideal. But I guess, you know, when they were looking to build a new race course, they had to, you know, find the land to build it, and that's where it is. But it's very popular, always will be. I think the Asian culture, as far as having a bet's concerned, is one that will always be there, and that will never fall away. So, look, it is very well received, and it's well received internationally. You know, I read an email from work today. Our races are going to the States. We're going to be, you know, beamed into the US now. So, you know, the races go to Australia, New Zealand, the UK, France, America. So, you know, our racing is received, you know, and people do come across it, and hopefully, perhaps we're bringing back the international races in time. That will then take us back to a level where we can compete, you know, worldwide. But as far as, you know, the local racing goes, it's a very good model. It's a great track, and it continues to get its support. You know?
There's something that I've seen that you do over there. I think it'd be quite good fun if they did it over here. That's interviewing winners on horseback.
Yeah.
Now, I can see Luke Harvey and the ex-jockeys would be fine, but do you think Nick Luck should have a go?
I think Lucky should have a go. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure Nick turned his hand to most things. I mean, that was something really enjoyable. So over at Kranji, they've got like the outriders and the ponies that take them to the start, and we had the idea that maybe we should do some interviews on horseback. And it was funny actually, because the couple of guys I was working with, Matthew Jones, he was actually allergic to horses and still is. He's actually moved back to Australia. And Tom Wood, who was also there at the time, is now in Hong Kong. I think he had very little interest in riding a horse. That sort of wasn't him. So almost by default, it was down to me. And I sort of said, well, yeah, let's do it, you know. And again, going back to your earlier question about differences and talking about the conditions and the heat, I mean, that was probably one of the most unpleasurable experiences, you know, doing that, interviewing on the pony, because it was just so hot, and you're out there, and you come back, you probably lost, you know, 5 or 6 kilos in sweat just by being out on the horse. But it was great fun, and sadly we don't do it as much now, but the interviews on the horse were great, and it just added another dimension to our broadcast. Whether or not it's something that they'll implement here, perhaps at certain meetings, I don't know. And I think Leslie Graham used to do it, didn't she, years ago, maybe at Cheltenham and places like that. But it's very popular in Australia, but whether or not it would take off here, I don't quite know. But as far as you know, some of the presenters go, I think they should all have a go.
Now, you've admitted yourself that you're quite a nomadic sort of person. you reach your life goal before you're even 30. So, you know, what's next? Are you sort of, is that this you now? Have you got other ambitions?
Definite ambitions. There are certain races I would love to call, and one of them would be sort of a portion of the Grand National. That's always been one that's been in the back of my mind. I mean, if I could do that, whether it be for radio or for television or whatever, it would be super. I'd love that. That would be amazing. I think ultimately, Simon, the ambitions are to get back to the UK at some stage. Hopefully, you know, get into a nice job and a nice position here. And you know, I love my racing, you know, full stop. So it's sort of to be involved in those big days, you know, Royal Ascot's, Goodwood's, Aintree's, Cheltenham's. I mean, I've done it as a groom, I've been involved, you know, spectator or whatnot, but, and obviously a bit of broadcasting as well. But, I'd love to come back here and you know, sort of, you know, really get sort of into a nice position, potentially in time to sort of cover these meetings. And, you know, I mean, I feel where I'm at now, I'm settled, and I see myself there for a few years yet, but it certainly won't be where I'll be sort of staying. You know, home is always home, and hopefully in time, that's where I'll come back to. So I think it's always just a case of trying to improve. I just want to be the best I can be, and you know, work with good people, I think is always a big plus. You know, you've got to do that, and I think if you surround yourself with the right people and you learn from them, then you're going to progress, aren't you? So I think it's just a case of continuing to progress and just, you know, sort of do the best you can, really.
So for somebody Googling you in 2028, just about to interview you, where are you going to be?
2028, I mean, hopefully we'll be back in the UK. I mean, a nice position at Racing TV or Sky Sports would be quite handy. But yeah, look, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, Hong Kong is somewhere that I'd always consider. I mean, that could open up in time. Like you said, you know, I love travelling. I love seeing new places. I love seeing racing elsewhere. And I think the fact that there are so many different jurisdictions where, obviously, you know, it's English speaking, there are certain possibilities. I mean, I would, you know, say go wind the clock back 10 years. I probably would never have considered or thought that I'd be in Singapore calling races. Which, you know, and I've called a Group One race, which was great. You know, I called a Raffles Cup last year. That was to call a Group One by, you know, the age of 31 or 32. Yeah, 31. You know, it was fantastic. You know, that's sort of something that a lot of race callers probably, you know, might never get to. And, you know, I got to call a very good horse called Debt Collector winning a Group One. So, you know, I love that. And yeah, as far as, say, you know, 10 years time goes and where I'll be, hopefully I've just, you know, continued to strive and go forward and just sort of wind up in a nice position somewhere and doing what I enjoy, basically. I mean, I just love what I do.
Excellent. Nick Child, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.